it's been said, and it's also been disputed, that learning to put your feet in the shoes of another person is a learned thing in childhood. But I don't agree with that point of view. We know now that interpersonal neurobiology and the mirror neurons we have in our frontal lobes, if they develop properly through a relatively healthy environment as a child, compassion for others is automatic. It's not something that we have to work to develop.
Welcome to The Art of We, the podcast where we explore how committed partnerships can be potent vehicles for fully delivering our gifts to the world. Hi, I'm Krista Vanderveer, a seasoned consultant and executive coach.
And I'm Dr. Will Vanderveer, a leader and educator in integrative mental health and wellness. As husband and wife and business partners, we keep learning that the key to maximizing our authenticity and impact in the world lies inside the health, security, and depth of our relationship.
On this show, we'll pull back the curtains to share lessons, insights, and practices from our own marriage and professional careers that help us thrive. If you're a leader, founder, or overachiever, and you want to leverage your relationships for personal and collective growth, then you're in the right place. Welcome to The Art of We. This is episode number 78. Today, we are going to be discussing a topic that's been swirling around in our We recently, and that is talking about the kinds of people or personality structures out there that have the capacity on one level to be really extremely seemingly brilliant in their careers or their external facing public appearances or way of being. And then on the other hand, on their private lives, specifically relationships, and that's why this is such a big topic for us, they seem to have a lot of different actions, not in integrity, potentially manipulation, lots of secrecy and lying. And there's this big disparity between their public life and their personal life. So we're going to be sharing a little bit around what's been stirring in between us and our conversation and how this has gotten stirred up recently.
Yeah, I think it started when some close friends of ours recommended a Netflix series called Dr. Death. And we became a little bit pathologically fascinated with the character, who's a real person. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And then right in the middle of that, this sort of expose came out from a partner of Andrew Huberman, who is a podcaster and Stanford professor, who some of you may have heard of. He rose to a lot of podcasting fame pretty quickly in the last few years. And I was a fan of his podcast and listened quite a bit.
Are you saying was because you no longer are?
Well, I was just reflecting on the past tense was there. I never put Andrew Huberman on a pedestal and regarded him as a guru who I should emulate. I definitely found a lot of value in the content that he presented. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we could talk about how public figures and famous people sometimes in this fall from grace where there can be a reckoning between the two worlds that you're talking about.
Yeah. And so we want to say that we're not here to try to figure out what's true about these stories. So for example, Dr. Death, we watched it on Peacock. I think there's a Netflix show called Bad Surgeon that was also made after a real person, Dr. Paolo Macchiarini. He was once world famous for his stem cell infused windpipe treatments that ended up being that it wasn't necessarily a good thing to be doing on humans because it didn't test out on animals and he didn't have the proof to do it. But somehow, and this is another part of this personality type, I think, is that he was able to convince, engage, get people on board for a particular type of science that actually didn't have the data. And so there was actually in his case, a lot of lies and deceit about what was happening behind the scenes in terms of if this was actually a treatment that should be done on humans. But the personality type is that somebody that is really gregarious, really captivating, really able to engage people and have them feel known and special and all these different things. That's another part of this personality. But we started watching this Dr. Death on Peacock series, and it's based on a true story. Of course, there were some things that were dramatized. But it really started to creep me out at the level of which his personal life was, it's like a fairy book story where he meets this reporter, she falls in love with him, they get engaged, he's really well known throughout the world, so he's going to have the Pope marry them, they're going to be at this fascinating church. It's like all of these things that were kind of extraordinary, but she she was a reporter and a researcher, and she believed him. And turns out that none of it was true, and he was married to somebody else with kids and lived in Barcelona. This is a really fascinating story. So I got hooked by a person's capacity to live that kind of life. And then, like you said, this Andrew Huberman article about him and about his personal life, which was, in short, dating several women at the same time, and these women didn't know about each other.
Right. According to the article, they were willing to have unprotected sex with him because it was their understanding that they were exclusive with each other, and come to find out there were half a dozen or possibly more women that he was involved with sexually without sharing that he was doing that with the other ones. So
thank you for reminding where we were going back to, is that we're not trying to debate what's true in the article. Obviously, there's two sides to every story. We have no idea. But there's an impact with this kind of news that came out about Andrew Huberman, Dr. Death. And it's not like this is something new. This isn't a new type of personality that's coming out and we're suddenly impacted by it. But for some reason, it led me, when you were out of town, Will, to go watch this Prime documentary on Bill Clinton. And we all probably know about Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton, but that wasn't where it stopped. Like, there were other ways that he was also living a very duplicitous life. A man who's probably has the most power in our country, and at the same time, lying and sneaking and having different levels of infidelity inside of his own personal marriage. So let's talk about why I'm fascinated with it. And I want to hear if you're as fascinated about this, Will, as I am.
As far as the theme goes, I guess I personally feel like long-term committed generative partnership that remains vibrant and alive and sexually vivid and creative as a practice is actually not a common practice. And that's why we built this podcast in the first place, is to raise awareness that this way of being together is possible. In the adult years of my life, I've had an opportunity to meet a lot of different kinds of people, both personally and professionally as a psychiatrist. And, you know, that I can just say from my own experience, which is not some kind of omnipotent, have all the data kind of point of view, but a lot of data, it's not common to meet people who are in partnership in the way that we practice partnership, with a tremendous amount of awareness and integrity and care and showing up and being vulnerable and all the things. So I've never kind of approached the view that someone like Andrew Huberman should be or could be or should be a leader in the movement of generative, long-term, conscious partnership. That was never something I ever heard him talk about or tuned into his podcast to hear him talk about.
Well, he talks about long-term partnership. He talks about a lot of these different elements that could be related back to relationship, just so you know.
Well, those were not the episodes I listened to, obviously. You're telling me that that's news to me for the first time. Like, I found his stuff about alcohol and sleep and working out and, you know, these kind of biohacker themes useful, and still find them useful.
So are you able to articulate, when you hear news like this article about Andrew Huberman, or when we watch Dr. Death together, which was like episode after episode, like, we're like, is this ever going to end? But we can't stop watching it, you know, because it's so fascinating. Like, what happens for you inside of this witnessing of this kind of activity or psychological potentially disorder? How do you relate to it? Or how does it impact you?
A couple things happen for me. One is I feel, I don't know if compassion is the right word, but I go into a psychological question in my mind of, you know, what happened to that person, mm-hmm. that they became injured in relationship to such a point that pathological lying or deceit became a central feature of their coping strategy or their way of living.
Definitely.
So that happens for me.
Yeah.
And then I guess on a maybe more personal reflection level, I start wondering about, are there people in my life who are pathological liars that I don't even know yet, because I haven't found out that they are. And it raises my awareness of, do I need to think twice about the people around me and how they're sharing and what's real and what's not? Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up with a person in my family I've talked about before, probably, who did a lot of duplicitous behavior and lying. And that was a part of my world growing up as a kid.
Right.
And my mom in particular was super devastated and impacted by that. Mm-hmm. So it was something that was very close to home for me as a young person.
We hope you're enjoying this episode. I want to take a quick break to let you know about a gift we created for you and your partner. We compiled our top 10 relationship agreements. Agreements that have been so powerful in supporting the success of our partnership that we even turned them into our wedding vows. These agreements help us stay connected, growing, and thriving as a couple, and they've been critical to help us create a kind of we that's way beyond what we've ever experienced before. You can download this free gift at KristaVanderveer.com. That's KristaVanderveer.com. Also, if you enjoy our podcast, it would be so meaningful to us if you left us a rating and review. Not only does it help others find us, but it gives us critical feedback on how we're doing. Thanks in advance, and now back to the episode.
So when we're watching Dr. Death, for example, are you consciously aware of, wow, like there's similarities here to what I experienced in my life?
I wasn't reflecting on that when I was watching this charismatic surgeon, but there were definitely themes that I saw that were similar to things that I saw firsthand as a little kid.
Yeah, I think that there's impacts over here too that are similar. I mean, the first one is like, how in the heck does somebody have the capacity not just to be leading something externally, whether it's presidency or this big scientific researcher or professor, or in Dr. Death's case, surgeon? How do they have time to be having that level of career and at the same time have the capacity and desire to be covering up their lives with whatever it takes to, I mean, it's enough to work with one partner and to really have them feel known and held and seen. But then if you think about doing that with three or four or five people at one time and with the intent of those people not finding out about other people, like that takes a lot of orchestration. So I get really just fascinated by like somebody's desire to do that and capacity to do that, number one. I mean, I could probably do that, but it would take a lot of time and I have zero interest in doing it, obviously. So I think any of us could do it, except for us who have empathy about how that the impact might be on the other person, which I think in this case, these people are probably lacking empathy. I don't know how you would do it without that.
I agree. It feels like choosing a lot of complexity and for not much reward in return is how I look at it. In my career, I certainly like to take on complex challenges and, you know, work on them for years to try to solve something. But there's a big reward in front of me to apply myself into a complex situation like that. For me, it's hard to imagine allocating so much bandwidth or energetic investment in creating a really complex puzzle like that relationally.
Totally.
I think that some men, and I'm not saying this is true at all, again, we've already given the disclaimers, but I don't know, you know, what's really true for these two people we're talking about today. But I think some men who go into therapy around these themes in their life, if they ever do, and a lot of narcissists never go to therapy, of course.
Yeah, and let's just pause there because potentially we're talking about narcissism. Potentially we're talking about sociopath. Potentially psychopath, but I don't think so based on that has a lot of violence in it. At least, well, Andrew Huberman, I guess, is accused of getting angry, but we all get angry as human beings. And then potentially there's some addiction here. So I just want to say that before you keep going about, I want to hear what you were saying about that, but just wanted to insert those potential psychological challenges there.
Yeah. When people do have the capacity and the desire and they commit themselves to looking under the hood to see what's really going on within themselves around themes like this of manipulation and deceit. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, there's a hidden, let's say, impulse or desire to hurt people that comes from wanting to hit back after being injured by a particular set of circumstances or a person in your childhood or whatever. So this concept of covert aggression can be uncovered. Mm-hmm. That's not the only possibility in terms of like what's under the hood. But it's also been seen while I'm on a roll talking about therapy for folks like this, that if you lack empathy, it's very difficult for people to learn that in adulthood. It's been said that, and it's also been disputed, that learning to put your feet in the shoes of another person is a learned thing in childhood. But I don't agree with that point of view. I think that we know now that interpersonal neurobiology and the mirror neurons we have in our frontal lobes, if they develop properly through a relatively healthy environment as a child, compassion for others is automatic. It's not something that we have to work to develop.
And then there's also the potential genetic component to all of that, which could inhibit the ability to have empathy / compassion and potentially even a certain kind of emotional quotient.
Definitely. I mean, they're heritable traits that you see in families. But I also think that in the 90s and early 2000s, we had a lot of hope that genes were going to explain everything under the sun. And in psychology, I'm talking about neuroscience and psychopathology. And there are conditions that are highly genetically determined and ones that are less so. And I think personality traits have some determination from genes, but there's an awful lot of nurture that's involved.
Right. And I agree with you. Like the second thing that happens for me, besides being fascinated by their ability to navigate and uphold this kind of life until they're busted, is compassion. It's compassion for the people who didn't realize that they were lying to them. Like, I think it's one of my worst nightmares of imagining, like you said, that there's a pathological liar in my life and I have no idea about it. And I wake up one day to find out that the way I thought life was is not. That's like a worst nightmare for me. And then I have compassion for what circumstances did this person grow up in such that they are highly traumatized. They had to build these specific strategies to survive in certain ways as children that they never were able to develop out of those. And then I have a curiosity of, you know, you're talking about benefits of living a duplicitous life and what do they get out of the manipulation and the pathological lying. And I wonder, I imagine that they do get a benefit out of, oh, I pulled that off, or I'm still not busted, or some sort of story about that. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I think there are different scenarios. The one with Dr. Death, it feels like to me, and again, we're basing this on a dramatization of a TV show. We don't know that this correlates whatsoever to the real
right.
situation.
Definitely.
And in fact, the woman reporter that Krista mentioned earlier, who was engaged to Benita, was not consulted whatsoever for the Peacock show that we watched, right?
Right. But she did do, I believe, other documentaries where she was involved. And we'll link all of these things in the show notes.
Yeah. Anyway, I think sometimes these characters, and I'm talking about Dr. Death in particular here, they create a world that they want to exist that doesn't exist. And they want to live inside of this fairy tale reality where they are going to get married by the Pope and they are going to create a whole new field of medicine called regenerative medicine, where you can order a liver in the grocery store and get a new one immediately, is one of the things that was said in the show. So I kind of feel like some of these characters who are pathological liars don't actually know.
Mm-hmm.
They can't tell the difference between what's real and what their fantasy world is. And they just, and again, it goes back to what happened to that person, that they decided that creating and inhabiting a fantasy world became the only option as a way of life versus living in reality. And so when I think about characters like Paolo that way, then all of this drama and damage to real people with real feelings who get caught up in it, who get caught up in the lie, really are more collateral damage for the person weaving this big fantasy. Then it's not like a personal thing. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's more like, I want this fantasy to be true and you're either going to join me in the fantasy and it's going to be great, or you're going to question it and I'm going to get upset and so are you and you're going to leave and whatever, but I'm still going to maintain the fantasy because that's what I'm really committed to. So I think there's an injury that has to happen to someone relationally where they land in a place that they then perpetuate in adulthood where the fantasy is actually what they're committed to in their life. They're not committed to other people to co-create a reality, which is something hopefully the rest of us are up to every day as we're co-creating reality with the collaborators in our world, like you and me, we're creating our reality together.
Right. And you're reminding me of a couple of things. One being that I think it's important to acknowledge, well, first of all, these are my morals, but I don't think it's ever okay, ever, to be in a committed, intimate partnership and lie the way that these people are portrayed to be lying. Like, just to make that super clear, never okay. And I can't even imagine having the capacity to be seeing a lover on the side and coming home to you and looking in your eyeballs and being like, oh no, I was at the supermarket. You know, I just like can't even fathom that. Okay, so I just want to say that. With that said, I think that there are people who are attracted, not necessarily consciously, to these type of characters that fit perfectly within their own wounding. So for the people who are attracted to Dr. Death and potentially to Dr. Huberman, they're also participating in this in a certain way. And I know that's probably really hard for some people to hear because, again, it is never in my moral compass ever okay to do what these people are portrayed to be doing, ever, ever, ever. With that said, we're all co-creating, and you and I talk a lot about this, like we're both responsible for what we're co-creating together. And I have heard people talk about, people I know who've been in circumstances like this, women talk about how they have been attracted to this type of person and they own that and have since learned that there are red flags that they're you know, not going to be participating anymore because it's too painful. And they got into a relationship that they didn't realize something else was going on, but they had their own wound that came to the table.
Well, we were talking about fairy tales, and right now we're talking about male and female partnerships in these two examples, but it could be any gender. But what part of that, she calls herself Sarah in the New York Magazine article, the person in the Huberman expose who says, you know, she was engaged with him, what part of her wanted that fantasy, that fairy tale to be true? Or in Dr. Death, what part of the reporter who's longtime professional colleague and friend kept questioning, like, you are blowing through all of these red flags and you're not paying attention. Like, what's going on? So, you know, it's fun for me from a psychological point of view to think about the true self and the false self, for example, as a structure, as a framework to think about if the so-called perpetrator or the charismatic person offers wealth and fame and specialness and whatever, status, right? Let's just call it status. That's pretty appealing, right? To a certain part of us as a partner. Like, we want to jump on that bandwagon. Hell yes.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. Clearly, there are so many rabbit holes that we can go down into inside of this conversation. And we are feeling the desire to go into a couple more rabbit holes on the next episode. So, if you're interested in this conversation, we're going to continue it in part two. We'll be talking about putting people on pedestals and why that is tricky and some ideas about what we think about that. And then also, you know, this question about that's come up around the Andrew Huberman and other public figures is it our business in their personal lives to be in their personal lives, in their personal business, if they're public figures? And I think we both have an opinion about that. And then we will also share, at least I will. You might, I don't know if you will. But the prediction, since this is the fresh, as of this recording, it was out maybe a couple weeks ago about Andrew Huberman. I'm going to share my prediction about what's going to happen next with him.
Okay, I look forward to hearing about it.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us in this part one, and hopefully we'll see you in part two.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you found this content valuable, please follow this show and share it with your partner or other key collaborators. If the show sparked an interesting conversation based on these topics, we'd love to hear from you. Find us on Instagram at @artofwepodcast.
And we'll see you next time when we explore what it means to be better together, like butter and toast, on The Art of We.